A grant from Trophy Time in Champaign, with plaques and promotional products to recognize all occasions, from athletic endeavors to musical moments to business achievements. Trophy Time, they're more than just trophies. Additional information available on the web at trophytime.com.
Good morning, this is Focus 580, our morning telephone talk show. My name is Jack Brighton, sitting in for your regular host, David Inge. Our producers are Harriet Williamson and Martha Deal, and Jason Croft is at the controls today. Glad you're listening. During this hour of the show, we'll take your questions on home gardening and landscaping issues, anything that you have on your mind. There's been quite a bit of rain lately, so there might be a lot of things popping up. Actually, we're just past the peak flower season, perhaps, but lots of growing things around the house, and we're here to give you some advice. Sandy Mason joins us. She is the horticulture educator with the University of Illinois Extension in Champaign County, and she's a month to take your questions, as I say. All you have to do is give us a call around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line anywhere you hear us around the Midwest, or if you're listening online anywhere in the continental U.S., 800-222-9455. And I'll make sure to mention those numbers a few times as we continue with Sandy Mason. Sandy, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here.
Hey, and it looks like the weather actually is kind of, you know, not too bad out right now. If people haven't been out actually here, we've seen that sun. I think that's what that's called up in the air, that bright object up in the air.
It was a funny blue tint to the sky this morning.
I couldn't figure.
Yeah, that was very, very strange looking to me, but glad to see. So you're right. Yeah, and I'm actually dying to get out in the garden. I don't know. After we bought a house a couple years ago and my gardening genes kicked in, you know, just reached that point. So I'm just dying to get out there, but it's been too rainy.
So hopefully after today, people can get out there and do more things. Yeah. The plants have been loving it, the weather. So that's the good news, at least with this, even though it's been fairly cool. But at least with the rain, looking at all my plants, they've just loved this weather and they put on a lot of new growth. So that's the good news.
The hostas are looking great.
Yeah. So that's good.
Mm-hmm. Well, we do have a caller to talk with. Why don't we just dive in?
Hey, sure.
Okay. Champaign listener on line number one. Good morning.
Good morning. I have a... Hello?
Good morning.
Yes. Hi. Sorry about that. I have a question about a star magnolia. We've had it in the ground probably about 3.5 years or so, and it's done pretty well. Unfortunately, it usually flowers right before the last freeze, and it's blown off. But we've noticed recently it's getting a lot of shoots coming up at the bottom, and we're not sure if we should be cutting those off to let the main tree grow, or do we just let those grow out and just, you know, fill it all up, or what's the usual way it goes?
Well, actually, with that particular magnolia, you can go either way, because with the star magnolia, actually, sometimes people grow it as more like a big shrub. Than anything. And if you like that fullness to it, then I think, you know, that's fine. If it started out as a tree, I mean, it sounds like it started out as a single stem, you might want to maintain that only because that generally it looks really nice to do that. But if you truly wanted it more as a shrub, you can certainly do that. And it will take on that habit as well.
It just seems like it's growing pretty slow for a tree.
Mm-hmm.
it's not getting a lot of height. It's going more outward instead of upward.
Right. And that is kind of where that particular, actually all the magnolias tend to be much wider than they are tall.
Okay.
So this is kind of the nature of the beast. But so with that particular one, the star magnolia, you can go either way, whether you want it as a large shrub or as a single stem.
Okay. Well, great. Mm-hmm. One last one. As far as tulips are concerned, they flowered. They did really well this year. And they've been in the ground about the same amount of time. That's when we bought the house, so that's why it's all in about the same time. But last year we went ahead and let them just, you know, go brown. Then we eventually trimmed them off, and so they did really well this year. And now right now we're at that itchy point where we want to get rid of them. They're looking pretty weedy and stuff, and we want to put something else in.
Mm-hmm.
So is it better just to go ahead and wait, or can we just, you know, kind of cut them down at this point?
Yeah, it truly is better with all the perennials, no matter what it is to let it, you know, brown naturally.
Okay.
I mean, it truly is better because that's the way they can photosynthesize, and then the whole idea is they're trying to store food reserves so they can do better the next year. So it truly is better for the plant if you can. But I understand completely where you get a little antsy and you want to get rid of them. So if all else fails, it'd be better just to leave them. You want to take off the old flower head. You know, you don't want it to go to seed, so there's no sense in doing that. So you can certainly take off that flower stem. There's no sense in keeping it. But as far as the leaves, if you could just leave them the way they are. That's great. Sometimes people actually just sort of flip them over, you know, sort of tie them over actually with one of the other leaves or something, or with a daffodil leaf. And that way you kind of get them out of the way, but yet they're still there. Okay. So even that is better than just cutting them off altogether.
Okay, and so then that leads to the last question, then, is that we bought everything we want to put in the flower bed now.
Right.
So
right.
How long is that okay just to leave them out? They're in those plastic bedding thingies buying from the garden store. And they're marigolds, and we've had them probably 2 weeks now. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we haven't had a chance to put them in, but now that it looks like it might be clearing up a little, we thought we might do it. Is it okay just to leave them in those little pots?
Yeah, the what are called cell packs, sometimes when they come in fours and six.
Right.
And usually it's okay to leave them in for a while, but you really don't want to leave them in there for long periods of time because, number one, they're really hard to keep watered.
Okay.
They tend to dry out really fast. And then we have found with a lot of the annuals is if they stay in there too long, they have a tendency to what's called stalling, where they just sort of, even once you plant them out, they just kind of sit there for a while, which is not necessarily a horrible thing, but they kind of just hang out for a while and then they finally start to grow. So it's almost like it takes them a while to sort of realize they're not in that little bitty pot anymore. And the roots tend to get all kind of matted, and it's really not the best thing. If you truly wanted to keep things for a long period of time, I'd go ahead and pot them up into like 4-inch pots or something like that.
And okay, so then we could wait out the browning of the tulips.
And then you could wait that, but you'll find that those tulips actually start to brown here real soon. Yeah,
okay.
If they've been not flowering for the last couple of weeks, you'll find that they'll brown up fairly fast.
Okay.
And I think you'll find within the next week or so, you'll be able to put those in without too much trouble.
Okay. Well,
and you can always kind of flip them over, flip the leaves over a little bit, the tulip leaves, and then just kind of stick your marigolds in there.
Okay,
so.
Right around them. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's a good idea. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks so much.
Sure.
Thanks for the call. Another caller waiting on line number 4 from Indiana. Good morning.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
This is sort of a general question. I have about 50 feet, 60 feet along a fence grape plants or arbor. I don't know. To me, an arbor, when I was a child, used to walk underneath them, hiking plants.
Right.
And, of course, ate the usual green grapes and got sick. But anyway, I've been out there. I'm not interested in cutting it down or anything like that. It's a great place for the birds. Sparrows seem to love the mazes inside it.
Mm-hmm.
But I've discovered this spring, I went out and I saw this thing sort of growing out of the ground. It was about half inch thick and stick up in the air about 3 feet. I went, what in the world? And I went to it and I pulled on it. I realized I'm not pulling this out. And it finally hit me. This is part of a grape plant. And so I cut it off close to the ground because it was hard to mow over it.
Mm-hmm.
Then I discovered there's a whole bunch. I guess I'd call them creepers or runners or something coming from the fence itself out into the yard.
Mm-hmm.
And I just didn't realize that the kid that's been cutting it, he just cuts it.
Right.
Didn't pay any attention to it, didn't say anything to me. And so I'm wondering about, just the grape plant itself. I'm sure that cutting it back up to the fence is not going to harm the plant or anything, but I just wonder if you could speak a little bit about it. It doesn't produce any grapes. I checked in the past on that. It flowers, little green things come out, but nothing ever turns into grapes, so it's just simply there to, basically for me, is for the birds.
Mm-hmm. Is this a wild grape?
I don't know. The man that owned the place has died, and his wife doesn't know what I know what he did to the house itself. He was sort of a, guy that does it himself, and whether the grapes were there before they purchased the house a number of years ago, or whether or not he put it in and just let her go, or what, I don't know. It looks like it just let go, it's not in any particular shape or anything, and I just sort of wait till, thing shoots out at the top and goes out about 5 or 6 feet, and starts to droop, that doesn't bother me. But I just wonder if there's anything else I should know about as far as cutting back, I shouldn't have to worry about things like that, and just that general kind of thing.
Yeah, they're pretty hardy. And with it being on a fence row, if that's what I understand, if it's on more of a fence row, it's not uncommon for those to be wild grapes,
because
that's where the birds sit. And, of course, the birds sit, and then they plant things for us. They give us all kinds of things like mulberry trees and wild grapes.
I got one of them, too.
Birds are good that way. And so I'm wondering if it's not a wild grape. In that respect, you can't hardly kill the things. So you can pretty much prune it however you want to.
Okay.
I guess the one thing I wonder about them coming up, I'm not familiar with them actually suckering up, you know, sending out rhizomes. Certainly the cultivated ones, I'm not aware of that they actually send up suckers or, you know, like that. But I wonder, the wild grapes will certainly reseed themselves quite readily. And I wonder if you're not getting some seedlings popping up in the yard as well.
Okey-doke.
And that would be fairly common. So you really can't kill it. I'd say, you know, kind of prune it however you want to and go from there.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Sure.
Okay, thanks for the call. A couple callers waiting and time for others. Plenty of time, in fact. We're talking this morning with Sandy Mason. She's the horticulture educator with the University of Illinois Extension in Champaign County, taking your questions on home garden and landscape question issues. If you'd like to join us, 333-9455 around Champaign-Urbana. Toll-free elsewhere, 800-222-9455. Next up, a listener in Flossmoor, line number one. Good morning.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I have a couple questions. I think I've talked to you before about my geraniums, and I thought they were kind of dead ducks, but we put them in our garage window, and it gets a lot of sun, and they cured up over the winter.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we had called the master gardener, and we were trying to dust it with, this dust is awfully hard, but didn't you say that you used Remedy?
Mm-hmm. Are you getting powdery mildew? Is that the problem? You're getting like a
That's what it looks like
on the leaves. You get
or maybe this blight. I'm not sure what fungal leaf spots. No, not powdery mildew. Fungal leaf spots or this blight. One or the other.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sitting here with my little book,
Home
Yard Pest Card.
Yeah, well, that happens to be one of the fungicides actually made from baking soda, which is kind of nice. We like to use some of these, you know, things that are fairly safe.
Powder.
Pardon?
That's a powder, too.
Right, and you can just purchase it. It's just called Remedy. It's just one of the ways. It's actually been specially formulated to be used on plants, so you don't have to worry about the rates and all that kind of stuff. And then you just mix it with water and then spray it on. And I've used it for powdery mildew and actually a lot of the fungal leaf diseases and actually had pretty good success. Probably with any of those is that you want to do it fairly early. You know, as soon as you start seeing the problem, you need to, you know, be spray. Yeah, because if it gets really far along, and sometimes it's really difficult. But I have a feeling with these geraniums, you know, you're going to be able to put those outside here real soon, if not.
Oh, ours are outside.
Oh, good.
They healed up over the winter. Putting them inside, they got all right.
You may find that getting them outside where there's, you know, better air circulation and sunlight and all that stuff, that a lot of this may sort of clear up, you know, sort of get.
Did. I mean, it cleared up inside.
Oh, well, then that's great.
Yeah.
Oh, well, good.
So if it happens again, that's what we should get.
Right.
So that comes out like a liquid spray.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
absolutely.
It's awfully hard to dust. Okay, now my other question is this. We have these junipers. We got this new landscaping about 6 years ago. And a couple years ago, one looked a little bad, and there were spider mites on it, and we sprayed for spider mites. And it's just gone on, you know. And now there's three of them we have to replace. And we had an arborist here yesterday, and he said, you just might as well replace them all. Now, what I want to know is what kind should I put in that's not going to – I see in the book it says that some kinds don't have these problems. On the other side, we have something called Hetzi junipers. Does that sound like anything to you? He didn't think so.
Hetzi? Well, maybe Hetz juniper. Hetz?
H-E-T-Z-I.
Okay. There's a Hetz juniper. Sure.
Is there something called that?
Right.
Okay. Well, is there any? Those seem to be all right. Do you think that's a good
sign? Where is this area? I guess I'm not. I'm trying to picture what.
It's landscaping in front of our house.
So it's right smack dab. It's that next to the foundation.
Well, yeah, but it's a big bed. It's not right next to. Yeah, it is.
Okay, and what
on
are you
that
wanting?
Side it isn't. It's there's sidewalk in between, but.
So what are you wanting these plants to do? They're trying to cover something. They're just.
No,
you just want them to look nice.
General, you know, it's just a general display of things in front of the house. We've got some barberry and some holly and yews. And he said, well, just put in yews. Nice. Well, we don't want all yews, so we thought we'd get some more junipers. But I want to get a good kind is what I'm saying. What's your suggestion for a good kind? These were sea breeze.
Yeah.
Do well.
Yeah, which makes me wonder if it's just not the location. You know, they don't like wet soil, for one thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, really.
My watering is a mistake?
Well, they don't like it to be wet, as in low areas, as in...
Oh, it's not low, no.
Okay, as in clay soil, those kinds of
actually,
things.
Actually, all of our house, you know, it all kind of slants away, and That's why I water things, because they don't get enough water. Everything mm-hmm. runs off.
Well, there is a kajillion cultivars of junipers out there. And right off the top of my head, I can't really think of one. And I guess I'd feel more comfortable if I knew the size of what you were looking for, because, you know, some of these guys can get really big. Okay. So I don't know whether you're looking for flat ones.
Spreading one.
So the ones are more like a ground cover type? Or?
No. but I mean, not an up and down one.
Okay.
They're spreading.
Okay.
Is there some way I could call you?
Sure. Why don't you give me a call at
the
extension office? That'd be just fine. It's 217-333-7672.
Okay.
7672.
Okay, because we're going to go buy something, and we want to buy something good. Thank you very
right,
much.
Right, right. And I think we just need to discuss, you know, how big you want them to be and those kind of things, because some of those junipers can get huge, absolutely huge. And you don't want to create a maintenance problem by having to trim these things all the time. And so that's what we really need to kind of decide. And actually, everybody needs to decide is sort of look at the mature height of a plant, you know, before you do any landscaping with them. You know, we always look at them in the pots, and they're so little
right.
and cute and all that stuff, and then they end up being these monsters that later on are having to chop down all the time.
So read the label.
Read the label.
How about
Go
that?
Figure.
Well, let's carry on here to line number two next, someone in Georgetown. Good morning.
Good morning, Sandy. Enjoy your program a
Great.
Whole lot. And I have an asparagus question.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I want to know if you should fertilize asparagus beds. And if you do, when and what kind of, what analysis?
Mm-hmm. Usually you'd want to go ahead and fertilize them once you're done with production. You know, and usually most people, by mid-June, they've stopped cutting them. So depending on how old the planting is, if it's a fairly old planting, you can certainly go into mid-June cutting
them.
It's
very old.
Then certainly you can go into mid-June and still harvest them. And then after you quit harvesting, that's a good time to think about fertilizing. And you could use anything like a 10-10-10 or 12-12-12, just a general fertilizer. Certainly could use, you know, if you have well-rotted compost, you know, something like that is just fine, too, just to add some organic matter. And sometimes that kind of helps, too, to help keep down some of the weed issues. You know, asparagus sometimes can have some weed issues. So if you can put, like, a top dressing of compost or mulch or something so you can help control some of the weeds too. That's good. So that should do it.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thanks for the call.
Okay. Goodbye.
And I should tell people, you know, I actually have an asparagus planting, believe it or not, that we figure is over 60 years old.
Yeah.
It's just amazing
on
how long it's well worth it. If somebody has, you know, an area where they can devote to a perennial crop like that, I think asparagus is well worth it.
Now, does it change over its life cycle in terms of productivity?
Yeah, it's kind of, yeah, mine's, even after 60-some years, it's kind of gone down. And I notice it's kind of moved around, you know, where it's actually sending up new shoots. And that certainly, that makes sense. So, but I have considered putting in a new crop. So every 60 years, you put in a new patch of asparagus.
We've got one in our backyard. It's amazingly hardy.
Isn't it? They're tough plants.
Good.
And tasty.
Yeah, definitely. Wish I could make my kids eat asparagus, but you know.
Chocolate coated asparagus.
I thought of that. Maybe cheese.
Cheese.
Yeah. Yeah. A little butter, garlic. Okay. All right. That's another show. On next to an Urbana listener, line number three. Good morning.
Good morning. I was calling because we have a very nice yard, but we also have a deer that's in it. And I'm trying to think about things that I can do besides grass that I don't have to worry too much about them being eaten. Are there any things that deer are adverse to consuming?
Yeah, actually, we have a whole list in our office of, and actually, they rate them as in fairly resistant, you know, because you just never know. Because a lot of it depends on the population of the deer. If you have a high population of deer, they're going to eat those things that normally they wouldn't, you know, because they're not going to starve. So it really depends on the population of deer. But there are those kinds of lists, which are kind of nice. And we'd be glad to mail those to you if you want to. I don't know if you got the phone number earlier, but it's 217-333-7672. And we'll be glad to mail that to you.
Could you repeat the number again?
It's a 217.
Yeah.
333.
Mm-hmm.
7672.
7622.
7672. 7672.
7672. Uh-huh. Thank you.
And actually, anybody, you know, whatever county you live in, there's an extension office associated mm-hmm. with it. So even whether in if you're in Indiana, certainly Purdue has extension offices in their counties as well. So if you look in your phone book under either University of Illinois or Purdue or under your county name, usually you can find your local extension office. And most of the extension offices have master gardeners, which can help you with these kinds of things like deer-resistant plants and those mm-hmm. things. So, okay.
Great. Thank you so
sure,
much.
Sure.
Thank you. Our lines remain full. We'll go next to someone in El Paso, Illinois, on line number 4. Good morning.
Good morning. Mm-hmm. Several years ago, I planted a number of small evergreen trees. I think they're Douglas fir, but they're really taking off now and have a lot of new growth this year. But I want to keep them small, and I want to prune them. Mm-hmm. You know, quite a bit. And when is the best time of year to do that?
Well, usually about now. Usually around the end of May, 1st of June is a good time, because what you can do, you know, they call those candles, you know, those new shoots that are real succulent.
They're different color green.
Right, they're mm-hmm. different color green, so you can tell that new growth. And you just want to cut those back a little bit, and usually you can cut them back by at least 2/3.
Okay.
So you just trim those back, and you can use it with your, you can just do it with your thumb and forefinger and just go around and just pop those. You don't take the whole thing off, you're just sort of cutting those back.
Well, years ago my dad had what he called spreaders, had trees around our home, mm-hmm. and they kept gaining on him every year.
Yeah.
He just couldn't, you know, keep ahead of them. And these trees are close enough to a building that they have to remain smaller, so I have to sometimes be aggressive mm-hmm. with the pruning mm-hmm. to get them to one size, and then they stay there and stop.
Yeah, so, good luck on that. Good luck on that one.
Because what I was getting at is, if I go past the new growth and back into the old growth a little bit, this is a good time of year to do it?
No, the one thing with a lot of the evergreens, like spruces and really the firs and all those guys, they're not like maple trees and stuff that just will go ahead and send out new shoots on even the old growth. You know, we can get away with that with maples and a lot of the deciduous stuff, but these guys don't do that.
Okay.
So you really have to pay attention to where the buds are.
Yeah.
And so usually that's what we say. That's why it's a fairly easy thing to do, just by cutting those candles back. You can really reduce their growth a lot. You can also sort of look at the overall plant, and sometimes you can take it down and actually trim back. I don't know how to explain it, but you know how the limbs will come out from a Y? They sort of keep producing these Ys,
sure.
and with a shoot coming out. Sometimes you can actually prune down to the point where you take off that main shoot, if this all makes sense, and then just have those Ys coming out. Does that make sense?
Oh, kind of. Yeah.
So then you're reducing the growth, but you're really paying attention to where those, you know, new shoots are coming out. So you really do have to pay attention more than what we normally would with deciduous plants.
Yeah, I plan to build a kind of a frame, because these trees are going to be kept small, like under 5 feet,
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to build a frame to use as a guide when I'm pruning, mm-hmm. so that mm-hmm. keep them kind of uniform.
Did you consider maybe planting just a compact variety?
Well,
there's lots of compact spruces and, you know, I don't know,
sure.
I'm sure Douglas firs as well. I'm just sort of letting you know, if this is fairly early in the stage of the tree,
right.
you know, maybe those could be, you know, transplanted and actually get something that's going to stay small. There's lots and lots and lots of conifers now that actually stay small.
Well, I'll give
so,
that some consideration.
Yeah, you might think about it.
Right now it would be okay to prune at this time of year then?
Usually once those candles start to come out, so usually it's end of May, 1st of June
okay.
is usually a good time.
Well, thank you very
sure.
much.
Sure, good luck.
Bye.
Thanks for the call. We're at our midpoint here with Sandy Mason, the horticulture educator with the Champaign County University of Illinois Extension Office, and taking your questions about home gardening and landscape. Any questions you have about that are welcome. All you have to do is call us around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Next up, someone in Champaign County, line number 2. Good morning.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
I have a yucca under my U.
Excuse me?
Sounds like a poem or a punchline.
I've been rehearsing that for a while.
Yeah.
But no, I really do, and I know somebody told me yuccas are easy to transplant. It's like what they call a century plant. Is that really
right.
also called like
right.
that?
Right, right.
And
mm-hmm.
That wouldn't alliterate, so. Right. I want to move it to, you know, a sunnier spot and, mm-hmm. and out on the parkway, and I also want to split it. But I also had another question. And since we have the webmaster here, maybe is it possible that in the future we could email a picture to you guys while you're on the air and ask you to identify something?
Sure. That's a neat idea.
That is a good idea.
I'm not ready to do it today. I brought a sprig of it over to the extension, and it hasn't been identified, but I think it needs to fill out a little bit more before... next month I'll send you a picture.
So this is a plant. You're not sure what it is,
right? It's a trellising plant, and it's going up along with some ivy I have going up the side of my house, and it has a problem. I think that might be need. It gets some kind of leaf canker or something every other year, roughly, and it has a nice, subtle, pretty little pink flower, and I'd like to take better care of it in the future. But I sort of need to identify, unless there's some kind of unspecific, systemic fertilizer, insecticide, or anti that would possibly be worth a shot that wouldn't damage it, or.
Well, are these tubular looking flowers? Kind of tubular?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, they're very small. They're. I don't know how to describe them.
Well, I was trying to think of maybe what it is. So it sounds like we need to see
it.
What's
going on. I did bring a sprig down and wasn't able to, but. I thought maybe a picture might.
Yeah, a picture's great. And actually, you can email that either to me
or
sure.
Do you accept a email identifying a picture at the extension office
sure.
as well?
You can actually email me if you'd like.
Uh huh.
And it's S.L. Mason. Just S.L. Mason, all one word.
At UIUC.
At UIUC.edu.
Okay. All right. Well, maybe I'll do that. But it would kind of be fun to have a picture and talk about it. But anyway, back to the yucca. One thing I've heard, it's hard to transplant. I've also heard that it's hard to kill. So there's a taproot involved, and I'm wondering how deep one has to go after that. Mm-hmm. And if I don't want it to come back in where it is, how deep do I have to go to eliminate that?
Well, and they're hard to transplant just because the root is so big. I mean, it has this really tremendous and then very hard root. So they're hard to transplant in that sense, not necessarily that they don't survive. It's just they're just really hard to transplant. And I probably get as many calls on how to kill them as I do on how to transplant them. I will tell you that because people tend to reproduce, and that's what I'm wondering is if this one's been there long enough, you'll find that they have little babies off to the side. They call them pups.
Right.
These little babies, and those are really easy to transplant.
Well, this has sort of three similarly sized starts for some reason.
Yeah. Well, you can certainly dig down, and you're really going to find that you really have to dig it as almost, it's like a small tree almost. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're just really big. But if you can really just take off one of the side shoots, one of the little pups, then those are fairly easy to dig up, and you can move those around however you want to.
I mean, I don't mind it being there, but it's just that I'd like to have one somewhere else. So if I keep regenerating other ones, better than a garden store in a way, but
yeah. So you could certainly do that if you just want to take off one of the pups and transplant those. You know, if you have the three there, just take off one of them.
But is there any kind of rule of thumb about how far one has to go after it to actually or to successfully, transplant something? I mean, obviously, it's probably going to come back if you don't get much out of it.
Absolutely. And the same thing, I don't know how wide this one is, but most of the time you're talking about another foot, however wide it is, then figure you're going to have to want to start at least a foot away from that, when you start digging. So you may be talking about a really big hole, as in it's almost a tree or a shrub. I mean, they really are that... I would at least start at that point, and then you can get down fairly deep at that point.
Okay.
You're maybe talking about certainly a couple feet deep. And the root will go farther than that, but usually you can cut it at that point.
And if I did want to eliminate it, is there something you can treat the root, top of the root with as you're covering it back up? Or?
Right. Well, you could certainly use one of the non-selective herbicides.
So sort of a Roundup on it?
Right, and you can just paint that on and just make sure you don't get it on anything you want to keep, like the U or anything like that. But if you just paint it on the cut surface, then you should be fine.
Okay.
Thank you. Good luck.
All right, bye.
Thanks for the call. Doctor, I have a yucca under my U. You have a contest for a punchline to that. That's a good one.
I like that.
Yeah. Thanks for that. All right. Well, we've got one caller waiting and plenty of time for others. If you'd like to join us, 333-9455 around Champaign-Urbana. Toll-free anywhere you can hear us, at least in the continental U.S., 800-222-9455. We're talking with Sandy Mason of the University of Illinois Extension in Champaign County, talking about home gardening and landscaping. And so please join us if you have questions. Next up, someone in Urbana, line number one. Good morning.
Hello. Mm-hmm. Hi. I have two questions. My daughter has bought a house in one of these new subdivisions where they've stripped off all the wonderful black soil and left mm-hmm. clay. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to find... I've found a list of plants that work well in clay soils, but they give only the Latin names.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if you know of a website that would have where you could put in the name and they would give you the common name and a visual of what it looks like and all the information about, you know, does it spread, is it sun or shade, you know, all that kind of information you'd need to know if you wanted to incorporate mm-hmm. that into your landscape.
Yeah, I don't know about a website necessarily. I do, you know, there's certainly software out there that will do that. We have to buy it separately. But I would imagine if you can just go ahead and just put in the name, you know, go ahead and type in the Latin name and then just Google that, you'll get all kinds of information from that. I don't know of one website that sort of lists all those things, to be honest with you. But certainly if you put in the Latin name, you'll get probably more than you can possibly think of.
Do you have some suggestions on working with these clay soils? We can hardly even get a shovel into this stuff. It's kind of awful.
Right. Well, I think anytime you can add compost, try to get some organic matter in there to help loosen it up. I think that certainly helps. And if you have an opportunity to do that, even before you put in your sod or grass or whatever, I'd be thinking about that. You know, work in some compost. And certainly locally, you can get it at the Landscape Recycling Center. They have really good compost, and, you know, you can get it delivered. And, you know, that helps. At least you can get something in there so it loosens it up. I think you're on the right track looking for plants that will tolerate that or do well at that.
How deep does this compost need to go? I mean, aren't the roots going to get cozy on the top and not go down into the clay?
Well, yes and no. You're absolutely right in that they'll... In some respects, number one, we probably want it about 8 inches deep. That's what we'd hope to do.
Okay.
But the idea is that by at least getting that top layer going, one of the problems with clay is that it tends to dry. When it does dry out, it's really hard to wet. And then when it gets wet, it's really hard to let it dry out. So it always is in its extremes. And so by having this kind of layer on top, it helps to sort of moderate those extremes so it doesn't get so darn wet where at least the top part, because a lot of the plants, they just don't like to be wet around the crown. And if at least you can, you know, change that enough so they're not wet around the crown, then for a lot of the perennials especially, they're fairly happy. And then they'll still work themselves into the clay. But you're right, I mean, in that sense. As far as, you know, other plants, I would also think about, even if you want to, when you plant them, think about actually planting them up a little bit, you know, as in kind of a little mound. We're not talking about anything big, but you just want to have just a couple inches above the ground surface, if that makes any sense. And so, again, you're sort of getting that crown out of where it's going to be really wet.
Okay.
So,
Very good.
Those things usually kind of help out, but it's a challenge.
It is. I'm new to this landscaping, but I have an old house with wonderful soil, and
just
sit and things will grow.
Right. So good luck.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm, sure.
Thanks for the call. Next up, someone in Champaign, line number two. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I have a question about a passion fruit vine. I bought it last summer, and the woman told me you should cut it down in the fall, and then it should come back in the spring. Well, I loved it. So I let it grow, and I got one blossom, I think, in January. I moved it to another room, and all of a sudden it's gone crazy. In the last couple months, we've had lots of blossoms, but no fruit. Do I need to buy another plant and then hope that something will happen?
Mm-hmm. So is this a tropical one?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And the blossoms are incredible.
Right. They are beautiful, and the passion flowers. I'm not aware that they have to have two.
Okay.
It may be just a matter of you need more so that they can get pollinated better.
Mm-hmm. But I need to go around with a Q-tip and protect them.
Actually, that would help, to be honest with you. It does kind of help if you make sure.
Okay.
And sometimes, and I'm just not sure with that being a tropical one, I'm not real sure on that. But sometimes even just the wind and movement and all the stuff that goes on outside actually helps them to pollinate better. So do you normally put it outside in the summertime?
Well, this is I just bought it last summer.
Okay.
And it grew like crazy, and I, like I said, I couldn't cut it down. And so it's been inside. It's kind of been chilly.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking
and you're right.
Hopefully at the end of this month I'll be able to take it out.
Right. And then so I would put it outside, so make sure it does get plenty of light and all that, and I think you may find that it'll do much better for you once it's outside. And...
Oh, we look forward to fruit tonight.
Okay, good luck.
All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right, thanks
Bye-bye.
For the call. We'll go right along here to an Urbana caller on line number 3. Good morning.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question about rhubarb.
Mm-hmm.
For many years, I grew rhubarb successfully in my backyard. Then in 2001, I moved out here to Clark Lindsay Village. My daughter-in-law took one batch of McDonald, which is a red variety, which had grown moderately well, took it in Minnesota, and it grew extremely vigorously.
Mm-hmm.
I took two varieties, the McDonald and I believe Victoria, which is a green variety, which had grown very vigorously for me. Brought it in 2003. We got an okay crop. 2004, it died back to mm-hmm. the ground, grew back up in the fall. Mm-hmm. Last year, it died back and did not reappear, and this spring, only a few small things are coming up.
Mm-hmm.
My garden will grow tomatoes very well, so I don't know what the problem is.
Mm-hmm. Well, about the only thing I've ever seen really with rhubarb is they're another one of those that really hates wet soil. They really, really hate it when it's wet.
Oh, yeah.
So they really need well-drained soil. So I don't know. I wonder if it's with the location. I assume, obviously, if you have it with tomatoes, it has full sun, which I
yes.
assume so.
Right.
And I just wondered about moving it to a different part of the garden area, maybe where, again, so it's up. And even, you know, even if you just can raise it up, even just a few inches by, you know, putting compost or more soil or whatever, a lot of times that's enough to get these guys out of the wetter area, and then they're happy. But
oh,
but I've certainly seen rhubarb rot. It just plain old rots out when it's too wet.
Where that could be a problem.
Yeah.
I think we've got clay down a ways.
And I'm sure that probably isn't helping matters any. But again, if you can just raise it, and you don't have to put a, you know, anything necessarily around it, like boards or anything like that. Sometimes just raising it up just a few inches.
Oh,
so it's
yes.
just up just a little bit is just enough that these guys are much happier.
Okay, I will
so
give that a
good
try.
Luck.
Then. Mm-hmm. All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for the call. We have one caller waiting and would welcome others. If you want to join us, 333-9455 around Champaign-Urbana. Elsewhere, 800-222-9455. Go next to a listener in Effingham, line number 4. Good morning.
Morning.
Mm-hmm.
I have a couple quick questions. One concerns a sedum that I have. It's I'm not sure of the variety. It's very already. It's 2 feet tall,
mm-hmm.
and it's light green with white around the edges of the leaves.
Mm-hmm.
And is it too late to divide it? And can I cut it back? In late fall, it just kind of flops all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
It's still kind of stringy.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if you could give me some advice.
Sure. And actually, it's not too late. Sedums are really pretty tough plants. I mean, they really tolerate a lot of abuse from us. So it's certainly not too late. And even for a lot of perennials, I would say it's not too late as far as, you know, dividing those. And then sedum divides very easily and does quite well. And what I would actually do is with a lot of the sedums, especially if you have halfway decent soil, they almost grow too well, and so that's when they get kind of tall and lanky. Is this in full sun, or are you going to move them into full sun?
Well, I'm not going to. I'm just going to divide it and throw the other half away.
Oh no!
Well, I have lots already. So
I know.
I'll give to somebody.
Oh, there you go.
But I mean, I'm not going to transplant it. But
it's in full sun, or
it's on the east side of the house, and for the most part, it gets sun probably. Half the day.
Mm-hmm. So that might be part of the issue because they tend to sort of get a little lankier when they're in less sun. So in full sun, but they do have a tendency with our soils around here just to grow too much. And so what you can do is actually just pinch them back or actually just take the top couple of inches off and just prune them back. Like when you transplant them, just take the top couple of inches off. Just prune them back. And that will make them, they'll actually branch a little bit better, and it'll make them shorter. What you will find is that the flowers tend to be a little smaller, but yet you'll still have lots of them. So it'll look a little bit different, but you still have plenty of flowers, and they'll be much shorter, and they won't flop over so much. So I think it's a good, you know, trade-off.
I think so, too.
So try it. See if you like them, prune back, and then every year I would just prune them back about, you know, usually about this time. I would just take off the top couple of inches of off the sedum, and you'll find that with Autumn Joy and a lot of the varieties that just have a tendency to flop later on in the season.
Now, is pruning a substitute for dividing, or I still should go ahead and divide?
Well, dividing is really, sedums actually will live a long time without being divided. I mean, they do fairly well, so that's really up to you whether you want to divide them, whether you just feel like the clump is too big or whatever.
Yes,
that's strictly up to you.
I mean, I thought the clump is pretty large.
Yeah, so you may find you want to go ahead and divide them, but I would definitely go ahead and prune them back and then just kind of keep that in mind for every year, sort of prune them back a little bit if you like the way it looks.
Okay, and my second question has to do with hydrangea. Mm-hmm. I have, I think they're called Nikki or Nikolai or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they are always very stunted. They're on the west side of the house. I have three of them. They don't grow very tall, mm-hmm. and the last couple of years they have little or no bloom.
Mm-hmm.
And last year I added was aluminum
sulfate, probably.
Sulfate, yeah, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. it didn't really have an effect.
Mm-hmm. Well, a couple things. Hydrangeas hate to dry out. We were talking about things being too too wet, but they're really ones that suffer tremendously if they dry out too much. So they like a well-drained soil, but they like it to be moist. So I don't know if you've been able to water them during the summertime, but they will definitely do better if you can water them in the summertime.
So like water them once a week?
Yeah, if we're not getting any rain, then I would water them. Certainly once a week would be just fine, but they really hate when they go weeks without any rain or any water whatsoever. So that might be part of the stunting problem. As far as the flowers, you might also be seeing some problems, just the fact that they're dying back in the wintertime?
And yeah, they're kind of coming up, yeah.
And that may be part of the problem as well, is that they're dying back so much, which sometimes you can't really do a whole lot about. Other than, I think if you could just get them a little healthier, you may find that they'll do better over the wintertime as well. So I'd think about watering them. You might think about fertilizing them now. I'd use like a 5-10-10 or something like that, lower nitrogen.
Do that and the aluminum sulfate?
You know, usually with the aluminum sulfate, what we're trying to do there is actually, you're actually trying to lower the pH. And so that's to change the colors because people like them blue. And if you have a lower pH, more acidic soil, then you get the bluer colors on them. So it's not necessarily, it has more to do with the flower color than anything.
Okay.
So the fertilizer is just fine. So to answer your question, yes, that's fine.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Mm-hmm.
Thanks for the call. We have less than 10 minutes left with Sandy Mason, the horticulture educator with the University of Illinois Extension in Champaign County. And we're taking your questions. We have a couple callers waiting and probably time for a couple more. 333-9455 around Champaign-Urbana. Elsewhere, 800-222-9455. Listener in Charleston next, line number one. Good morning. Hello?
Yes.
Yeah.
This is Anne, and I have two questions for you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm having also trouble with my hydrangeas. Mm-hmm. They're very obviously susceptible to the heat, and they can wilt very, very quickly, mm-hmm. but they mm-hmm. respond real fast.
Mm-hmm.
But the major problem I'm having is that they're developing, just as they did last summer, these odd-looking, burnt, brown-looking things on their leaves. They really look like they're burnt, even though they're very moist around the soil.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm puzzled as to what's going on with them.
Mm-hmm. When does it show up? You start seeing these
brown. It's already showed up.
Oh, really? Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, I wonder if you're not getting a leaf disease problem.
Yeah,
it almost sounds like a fungal leaf
disease. The Garden 3 mm-hmm. spray on them, which is for, you know, several different things. It,
mm-hmm.
it can be for a bug or for three different types of problems, for a fungicide or
mm-hmm.
for a mite or anything. And I haven't really noticed any difference in it yet. They're in a backyard situation. They get only like a half day of sun, so they don't
mm-hmm.
get too much sun
mm-hmm.
because I notice that they will wilt so quickly.
Yeah, yeah.
They get a lot of sun.
Mm-hmm.
And I do get nice blooms on them, but mine also aren't growing you know, rapidly either.
Well, I wonder, especially since it showed up so early, I'm really wondering if it's a leaf disease problem. So I think it's one of those things. Are you, you're in Charleston? Is that right?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay. You might be able to take it into the your Coles County Extension office.
Okay.
And if they can take a picture of it, we actually have a digital distance digital diagnostics where you actually can send out a picture. Because I have
okay.
a feeling that's what's going on. If that doesn't seem to work for you, then you can certainly go to the U of I plant clinic. But I think somebody really needs to look at the leaves and say, yeah, we got this. Because, and then the fungicides can be very different, you know, depending on what the problem is. So even though you've used this stuff, it may not be exactly, you know, what the problem is or what that particular fungus is. So probably need an accurate identification of what's going on with those. So that would be one thing. I would also think about, you know, the whole fertilization thing, you know, might be something. It sounds like you're taking care of the water issue because that certainly will stunt them. Are they mulched? Do you have, like, wood chip mulch? Okay, so that certainly can help, too.
Right. And then the other thing I wanted to talk to you about was I have a lilac bush, and it's growing fine. But just last year, and it started a little bit the year before, but last year I had it, and then this year I've got it. And that is, I'm not getting leaves now. And
no leaves?
No leaves. I have very few leaves on it. It's blooming, but very few leaves. And then this year, I finally got my good glasses on, my reading glasses, and went out. This is pitiful when you get this old. And I was trying to examine it very closely. Mm-hmm. And in the crux of the little, of the twigs, you know, and, mm-hmm. and where they bend at or where they branch out at, mm-hmm. there is a little bitty, it almost looks like you've taken Miracle-Gro and packed it in. It's a little bitty green crystal-like things. So I don't know if that's a fungicide or if it's a fungus of some sort or...
Well, when you're bringing your hydrangea in, why don't you grab some of your lilac at the same time? Because it really doesn't sound familiar. And I guess when you first started talking about the leaf problem, sometimes what we do see on these guys, because, you know, the leaves kind of come out a little bit before the flowers do, is that sometimes we get these horrible wind, you know, which we certainly had this year. Sometimes even a little wind along with frost, and the leaves just get damaged. And sometimes they have to re-leaf. In other words, the first set of leaves just, you know, just didn't make it because...
I can just, you know, they're
dead. Slow.
You can just snap them right off. So it's affecting the whole plant,
so
not just the leaves.
The twigs are dead? Is that what you said?
Yeah, some of them are just dead. You can just snap them over. There's nothing green on the inside at all. And then I've got right next to them on either side some beautiful peony bushes. So it's I don't think that it's something that everything has. It's just something that's affecting this lilac bush.
Yeah, I would definitely, that'd be another one I think somebody needs to take a look at. Because right offhand, it doesn't sound like a particular insect or disease that I can think of that has, you know, green crystalline looking stuff. You know, I'm just not, that just doesn't ring a bell at all. So I think if somebody could take a look at it, I think that'd help immensely. And if you can sort of bring them a sample that where it shows the worst of it and some where it's maybe just starting to get it and then some that looks really good. If you can kind of get them, you know, bring samples like that, and that's good for anybody if you're bringing in samples for folks. If you can get them in different stages, it really helps immensely when it comes to diagnosis.
Right. So. Okay, well, those are the two
questions.
Okay,
well, good luck.
And I appreciate, and I also enjoy you on Channel 3 very much.
Oh, thanks.
Okay, thanks a lot, Sandy. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Thank you. And Sandy also writes a column for the Champaign-Urbana News Gazette, which I always read. Always love reading. Oh.
Thanks.
Yeah. Yes. Always learn something new. So we will carry on here. Line number 2 next, someone in Champaign. Good morning.
Hi. I was calling in response to the person who was looking for a website.
Mm-hmm.
The best one that I found is davesgarden.com, and he has a lookup by common name or genus or family and all that. He's got pictures, and he also has his own locator and a lot of and a forum. So.
Oh, I think I have looked at that website before, so that's good. So davesgarden.com?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Good. Hey, thanks.
Great. Thanks for the call.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Just a couple minutes left. We'll try to squeeze in a couple more callers here. Someone in Lamont next, line number 4. Good morning.
Good morning. I have a question about hydrangeas also. Last year I received a gift of endless summer hydrangea, and it got eaten to heck and gone. I transferred it from the south side of the house, which is not terribly far from the house next door, to the west side, which was an open area, and it got eaten in both places. And I wondered if you heard anything about any particular type of insect that goes for that species.
Mm-hmm. So when you say it got eaten, they just ate off the leaves, or?
Yeah, the leaves. They just wrecked it. Mm-hmm. I brought it in for the winter, and it was the last I saw it, it was greening up. We moved, and my daughter's taking care of it now. Mm-hmm. But I just wonder if I'm going to have the same problem this year, no matter where I put it.
Yeah, and so you didn't see anything like Japanese beetles or caterpillar or
no,
anything like
nothing.
That,
it was or? It was a pretty a fair size when I got it, and it was down to like one little branch, and I saw it greening up. A couple of weeks ago, it was starting to grow, but I didn't spray it for anything because I didn't know what to spray it for.
And you know, it's not rabbits.
Well. I don't know.
Because rabbits love hydrangeas. I found that out.
Oh, that I did not know. We had rabbits like mad. Yeah, they ate all my lilies.
I would wonder about rabbits.
That's a thought, although I would have thought, well, I don't know. It seemed like an insect, but it could well have been rabbits. Mm-hmm. I never thought of that.
Well, if you look, especially, you know, usually they end up taking off part of the twig, too. They usually don't just take the leaves. But with rabbits, they leave a very clean cut. It almost looks like, you know, somebody took a pair of pruners. It's just this 45-degree angle cut, and they have very sharp little teeth. So it's a very clean cut. So sometimes you can tell just by looking at the cut that it was a rabbit. But I know for a fact they love hydrangeas. And so, you know, with those kind of things, you just have to put a fencing around them, at least when they're young. You know, it seems like when those plants are young, the rabbits love them.
Yeah.
You know, something new, something different. You know, they got to check it out. And, you know, ornery critters.
We have just about a minute left. You've got some garden walks to mention. Do you want to do that?
Sure. You know, June is garden walk month, so it's coming up here real soon. And, you know, garden walks are such a great opportunity to sort of forget your own garden for a while and see what other people do. And you'll find gardens that you like more than others. But, you know, I think it's just a great opportunity to talk to other gardeners and just get some ideas for your own backyard. Sometimes we just feel stumped on what to do. So June, you know, this is coming up not too terribly long. Tolono is having theirs June 17th, and Monticello is also having theirs June 17th. Champaign, we're having ours on June 24th, and then Fairbury is having theirs on June 25th, and I'm sure there's a whole bunch of other ones out there. Danville always has one, so just sort of check with your local extension office, and I'll bet that there's a garden walk near you sometime in June, probably. So just a great opportunity, I think, to talk to people and get some ideas.
Great. We'll have to leave it there. Thanks so much to our guest. Sandy Mason is the horticulture educator at the University of Illinois Extension in Champaign County with us once a month. Thanks so much, Sandy.
Mm-hmm, sure.
Today's broadcast is made possible in part by a grant from Horene's Pianos Plus, your Steinway Piano Showroom in Bloomington. Horene's Pianos Plus offers new and pre-owned pianos by Steinway & Sons, Boston by Steinway, and other fine pianos. Programming on AM 580 is made possible in part by a grant from the Thrifty Nichols American Classifieds, distributed each Thursday in over 100 towns in East Central Illinois, on the web at AmericanClassifieds.com.
That's it for this hour of Focus 580. When we return in about 10 minutes, we'll be speaking with David Remnick. He is editor of the New Yorker magazine. His new book is Reporting, Writings from a New Yorker. We'll talk about that and about reporting in general. First, some news and a market update.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm